one of the most remarkable treasures ever for the whole country. I'm Shirley Sterling, and I support KPFK.
And I'm Gary Sterling, and I support KPFK, as you could tell.
Hi, I'm Nita Valens, and this is a Fund Drive moment. I'm here to remind you that our listeners are the most reliable source of income for KPFK. Yes, that's you, making up over 90% of our annual budget. With your gift right now, you could move us closer to our goals and help us shorten on-air fundraising. Please call 818-985-5735 or pledge online at kpfk.org. Thank you.
This is Dr. Michio Kaku, professor of theoretical physics and author of Parallel Worlds and Hyperspace. And whenever I'm in Los Angeles, I tune into my favorite radio station, KPFK 90.7 on your FM dial.
300 years ago, Sir Thomas More invented the word utopia, where everything was going to be hunky-dory. But now we know it's going to be a green-powered Earth, and that'll be Solartopia.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what was needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia?
Lost, so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But don't you know?
Yeah, we started to burn too many things we found. That's the divine Dara Williams singing with Pete Seeger, the legendary Pete Seeger, and Jeff. David Burns, not the talking head David Burns. But
and don't forget about the Rivertown Kids.
And the Rivertown Kids, that's right. That song was on an album called Tomorrow's Children. They won a Grammy, as a matter of fact. And I was responsible. This is Harvey Slugger Wasserman. I was responsible for one word of that sound. And I'm going to walk over to the Grammy office and try and get a little statue, but I don't think they'll give it to me. We are here at the California Solartopia Show. We got the great engineer D'Angelo on the horn for us. And Myra Reeson, my wonderful co-host. Great to be with you again.
Hello there, everybody. We really want to thank everybody who's tuned in to listen to KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 90.7 FM in Santa Barbara, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, 93.7 FM in San Diego County, and 99.5 FM Ridgecrest and China Lake, and streaming online at kpfk.org. Thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, it's great to be here in the studio for California Solartopia. We've been too gone long, as they said, too long at the fair. And we are back with just so much to deal with. I want to mention we are going to have Heidi Huttner on with us in a few minutes. And Heidi is the producer of a film, The Women of Three Mile Island, that's going to open in Santa Monica tomorrow night at the Monica at 7:30.
Well, actually, it's going to be at the Lemley in
That's on Friday.
If Thursday, it'll be downtown Santa Monica.
Yes.
Friday, it'll be at the Royal.
Okay, there you go. The Monica and the Royal. We will talk about that in a minute. This is about very, very devastating stuff about the women of Three Mile Island and what really happened there. And I, unfortunately, was there. Worst 10 days of my life, and we're going to talk about that. But in the meantime, we want to deal with California itself, Diablo Canyon, the nuclear plants up there. And we are at the bottom of a steamroller. And I got to tell you that I am more and more convinced that the Democratic nominee for president in 2024, you heard it here second or third, will be Gavin Newsom. We're starting to get balloons now from Joe Biden. Says that if Donald Trump is not the nominee, he would not be running. And who is second in line but Gavin Newsom? I will point out that in the 20th century, without exception, in every presidential election in the 20th century, the taller candidate won. I have met Gavin Newsom. He's a pretty tall guy.
I was in an elevator with him one time with a bunch of young teeny boppers who happened to love Taylor Swift.
Oh, well, how does Gavin Newsom feel about Taylor Swift? Well, we don't really care. What we care about is what he's thinking about nuclear power. Gavin Newsom has been stabbing us in the back, not only about nuclear power, but also about solar. And do we have Jeff with us? I can't hear you.
Well, let's keep going.
So Gavin, I believe, is setting himself up to be run for president. I think it's pretty clear. He did debate that fascist from Florida, who thankfully is falling in the polls. And we're starting to see a lot of action towards Nikki Haley. I don't have any idea what Nikki Haley thinks about nuclear power. Oh, rock and roll. Okay. But I do want to finish that thought. We're going to go to Jeff Daniels, who's in Australia. Not the actor Jeff Daniels, but Jeff Daniels has some amazing stuff to talk to us about energy. But at any rate, Gavin Newsom, we did have a deal to shut Diablo Canyon, the two atomic reactors at San Luis Obispo that would pour radiation into L.A. County if God forbid, there was an accident. All 10 million of us would have to swim to Japan, basically.
But Newsom, Harvey, excuse me, wouldn't we be swimming in radioactive water now that TEPCO is dumping radioactive water into the Pacific?
Exactly. We'd get sandwiched between radioactivity from San Luis Obispo and radioactivity from Fukushima. Gavin Newsom broke his word. He signed a deal in 2016 to shut Diablo Canyon in 24 and 25. He has broken that deal. And God knows what his payoff is, but he's clearly running for president, and clearly the nuclear power industry has a lot of money to spew, as we would say, on a presidential candidate. And I guess Gavin has got his very tall pockets open. So listen, this is Harvey Wasserman here with Mal Reason at the California Solartopia Show. We got D'Angelo in the control room, and life is good. We have Jeff Daniels on the phone. Jeff, are you with us from Australia?
Hi, I am Harvey, and actually, as you can tell from my accent, I'm not in Australia. I'm in the U.S. at the moment. I'm in New York. I hope you can hear me well. I'm just driving in my car.
So, Jeff, let me ask you a question. Well, when you're in Australia, do you speak with an Aussie accent, and then when you come to New York, you switch to a Brooklyn accent?
Yes, and
That's how it works.
If you're driving, man, we want you to pull over and get off the road because we don't like talking to guests who are driving in a car.
That makes absolutely.
It also sounds like you're next to the.
You sounds like right now.
Sounds like you're next to the ocean, so that sounds good too. So, Jeff, you are deeply involved in the energy issues. Tell us, I usually like to let a guest tell our audience what he or she is about. So, why don't you do that, and we'll dive in to a good conversation with you.
Still with me? Hello.
Yeah.
No. Oh. Hi. Sorry about that. You still with me?
Yes, we're with you.
We hear you,
okay.
Jeff, loud and clear.
I can hear you. Thanks. So, sorry, you're asking about how involved in
Tell our guests why we have you on the show.
So, I've made a documentary called Television Event. It's about the impact.
Right. Your sound is terrible. Your sound is terrible. All right, Jeff, I'm going to tell people what you're about. You got to get to a place where you got better sound. So you have made a film about the aftermath of a film called The Day After. And The Day After showed on national television in the United States. I remember seeing it in the 1980s. And it portrayed the United States after a major nuclear war. And it scared the heck out of millions and millions of people. And really did a number on the question of a nuclear war, but apparently not enough of a number to make us lose interest in building nuclear weapons, which the United States is still doing. And I will point out that Diablo Canyon, like all other commercial atomic reactors, is part of the nuclear weapons chain. And your film now which is available online, I believe, examines the impact that the day after had on the American public. Is that correct?
That's it, yeah. I mean, this is a film that numbers do count. When you have 100 million people watching the same thing at the same time, which is how things worked with television back then. We're talking about 83. This is a time when you had more people watching network television than ever before or since. And so everyone was talking about nuclear war, something that they would rather not. And that made a difference. It was certainly something that President Reagan felt was a threat to his deterrence plan.
Yes, and 100 million people saw this thing, including me, and it did affect Ronald Reagan. Reagan had no intellectual interest beyond television, watched it apparently and was freaked out by it, and it may have prevented him from blowing up the Earth. We don't know. At the time, Reagan did meet with Helen Caldicott, the great anti-nuclear doctor from Australia, and may or may not have been affected by her. I talked to her about her meeting with Ronald Reagan, and she said that he scared the heck out of her. That's not exactly what she said, but she said he scared the heck out of her. But then apparently he was affected by this film. Is that correct?
He was. In fact, this is a film that he felt he described in his memoirs as depressing him greatly. And according to his biographer, he had never mentioned that word depressed in any of his personal archives. So this really got through to him. It made him confront a reality that he simply couldn't avoid, and now most of America knew it too.
Go ahead.
Jeff, can you remind our listeners what the name of your film is?
Certainly. It's called Television Events. And I called it that for a number of reasons. The day after itself became one of these television events, this time when you had to, they called it appointment television, where you had to watch what you were watching at that specific time and get together. I got together with my family, all 40 members of my extended family piled into my grandparents' basement down in Flushing, Queens, where they had a big screen TV, and we watched the day after, and it made a big impact. But also there's the fact that ABC, this family-friendly network that gave us Happy Days and The Love Boat, dropped a nuclear bomb on the American living room. And so in that way, it was a television event.
Well, there was another one around that time, Roots, which also affected the public. But that was, I think, a 13-part series. And I have to say the star, LeVar Burton, turned out to be a heck of a guy. I met him once. He's done great work. So your film, Television Event, how do people see it? Where is it?
Well, we just had a theatrical launch at Lawrence, Kansas, where the day after was originally filmed. And we had an incredible screening there, led by my impact producers, Arthur Kenegas and Melanie Bennett. It was just amazing to share this film with the Lawrence community. People who weren't able to be there in person were able to watch my film online. It's available on Amazon Prime, on Google Play, on Apple TV, and YouTube. It's also available on Vimeo on demand. So Television Events, check it out.
Okay, and there's another one that you need to check out. Do you know about the film called The Man Who Saved the World?
Oh, yeah, that's amazing.
So The Man Who Saved the World is about a guy who actually saved the world. It is a true story, and it happened just before the national filming of The Day After, but nobody knew about it. And what happened in this film, which the great Kat Kramer showed at her nuclear festival a few years ago, I was on a panel, I think with Ed Asner.
It was actually the Uranium Film Festival, but Kat Kramer played a definite role in organizing the event.
Right. And the true story is, And this is, you know, you got, and this would have really multiplied the impact of the day after about, you know, this, the subject of your film, is that there was in a Soviet control room, the illusion, it turned out to be false, but the illusion that the United States had launched a missile attack on the Soviet Union. And the protocol was that they were supposed to counterattack. And there was one guy whose name is in Russian, and I can never pronounce it, who refused, at the risk of his own life, refused to launch the nuclear attack that would have destroyed the world. Because he waited for another level of confirmation that the missiles had always actually been fired from the U.S. And so he didn't do what he was supposed to do, which was blow up the Earth. And this occurred just before the showing of The Day After, which your film television event is about.
Oh, I'd like to remind our listeners that KPFK is in a fund drive. And if you go to kpfk.org and pledge your support, we would really appreciate it. And now let's get back to this conversation.
So, Jeff Daniels, you are not the Jeff Daniels who played George Washington in the wonderful drama The Crossing. He's from Michigan. I guess you're from New York and now live in Australia. But tell us one more time where people can see your film. And then you can go back to driving. We appreciate you coming with us.
Yeah, no problem. You can go to televisionevents.com. There's a link right there where you can go straight to my film, and you have a number of different options to watch it on Amazon, on Apple TV, iTunes, Google Play, or YouTube. Check it out, televisionevents.com.
Well, it was an amazing event, but unfortunately it did not change the world. I mean, it gave even – well, maybe Ronald Reagan would have blown up the world if he hadn't seen The Day After. That's possible. Who knows what Ronald Reagan would have done. There you go. So thank you, Jeff, for this. Thank you, Jeff Daniels. Eileen Proctor, thank you for getting Jeff with us. And I will certainly go find your film. And I do really encourage everybody to see this film, The Man Who Saved the World. This is one of the most shocking films I've ever seen. How close we were to blowing up the Earth based on a false read that one man could very well have gone ahead with his orders at great risk to himself. He did not launch the missiles that could have destroyed at least the United States and much of the world as well. So, Jeff Daniels, thank you so much for that. The film, again, is Television Event. It's on all over the place. What's your website, Jeff?
TelevisionEvent.com.
Okay. Thank you so much. Great to have you with us, and we'll have you back after I watch the film. And you need to watch The Man Who Saved the World.
Thank you.
Truly astounding. Thank you so much, Jeff. Thank you, D'Angelo, for arranging that. I guess we have Heidi with us now. Okay. Myla, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say that one of the things that didn't change is that the United States is still ramping up its nuclear weapons arsenal and investing billions of dollars now in new nuclear weapons. So that didn't change. In fact, it seems a lot worse.
Right. And Barack Obama, who ran pledging to abolish nuclear weapons, turned around when he was in the White House and pledged $1 trillion to upgrading the arsenal and all of our commercial reactors. There are 93 plus one about to open next year, commercial atomic reactors in the United States, including the two at Diablo Canyon at San Luis Obispo. They are all part of the nuclear weapons industry. Don't anybody ever tell you otherwise. In fact, the Prime Minister of France, which has 56 reactors, has recently said, and I paraphrase, without nuclear power, there are no nuclear weapons, and without nuclear weapons, there is no nuclear power.
And even if none of these nuclear weapons are used, we still have vast contamination throughout the United States at all of the nuclear weapons facilities, because they do it in different places. So you've got one part being manufactured at Los Alamos, and another part
Hanford.
I'm sorry,
INEL. That's okay.
Yeah, all of the various sites around the country, all of them are contaminated with plutonium and other horrible materials. So even if none of them explode, we're still creating a terrible mess for many generations to come.
Right, and we believe that's probably one of the reasons why Gavin Newsom is keeping Diablo Canyon open, because Diablo Canyon makes no sense economically, ecologically, in terms of jobs. It's killing jobs. The CPUC, California Public Utilities Commission, is in the process of killing the solar industry here, all for nuclear power, and all of which is part of the nuclear weapons complex. So don't you ever forget that. This is KPFK and California Solartopia with Milo Reason. I'm Harvey Sluggo Wasserman.
Sakura Flores
is also with us. Go ahead.
You're listening to us on 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, 93.7 FM in San Diego County, and 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake. We're also streaming worldwide at kpfk.org, where you can pledge your support.
Yes, we're in the middle of a fund drive. If people can give us support, Milo, if you'll tell folks how to do that, that'd be great. Send us donations at kpfk.org. Hit the donate button and keep us rolling. Even a couple bucks makes a difference. We now have with us the great Heidi Huttner. Heidi, can we hear you?
Yes, can you hear me?
What? Hello, how you doing? Yes, we can hear you fine through the miracles of modern technology. I think you're still in New York. We are here in Los Angeles, but you're going to be here tomorrow for the opening of your new film, The Women of 3 Mile Island. Now, this one, folks, this one takes some talking. The Women of 3 Mile Island isn't the main title is Radioactive, and then there's a colon there, and then The Women of 3 Mile Island. It is an astonishing film. In which I have once again wound up on the cutting room floor. But nonetheless, I was there in 3 Mile Island in 1980, in January of 1980. I went to interview people who were claiming to have been harmed by radiation from 3 Mile Island. Heidi, I'm going to set the stage for you. The meltdown of 3 Mile Island occurred on 4 a.m., March 28th, 1979. It became global news. Walter Cronkite most of you are probably too young. Think about Walter Cronkite. He was America's anchor and on CBS News, and he announced that this meltdown was going on, although the company denied that fuel was melting, which turned out to be a huge lie. And as everything else the nuclear industry says, and then it died down, so-called, and the company and the government denied that significant any amount of radiation escaped, and that was a huge lie. And I started fighting nuclear power in 1973, and we had started to build a movement already by 1979. And I started getting phone calls from women in the central Pennsylvania area, primarily a woman named Jane Lee and her cohort, Mary Osborne, complaining, telling me that people were dying from radiation that the nuclear industry said didn't exist. And so I got an assignment from Rolling Stone, and I went into central Pennsylvania in January of 1980. I spent 10 days. It was the worst 10 days of my life. They were venting radiation. I was going from farmhouse to farmhouse, interviewing people, sitting at their kitchen tables while they showed me their lesions and cysts and their hair falling out, telling me about the metallic taste, telling me their animals couldn't breed. I actually stood in Middletown across from the TMI, 3 Mile Island, and held a dog in my arms that had been born with no eyes. Sorry, folks. And, you know, I felt like I was in the middle of a bad Japanese science fiction movie. And I interviewed a large number of women, mothers, who were just terrified and horrified by what was happening around them, including tangible symptoms in their children, especially newborns. There was a woman named Joyce Karate, many others. I still have 9 hours of tapes in my archive of the interviews I did with these farm families. And you now, Heidi Huttner, come along all these years later. It's 45 years. And you have made this film interviewing or showing many of the people that I interviewed back in 1980. I actually wound up writing an op-ed that got into the New York Times, apparently causing tremendous battles within the New York Times editorial board, which they would not let me, and I'll get to you in a second, Heidi, they would not let me say that I, even as an editorialist, believed people had been harmed, that, but they would let me say that people in the area believed that they had been harmed. Not only they, but their farm animals. And this caused a major uproar. I wound up co-authoring a book called Killing Our Own, which is free on the internet. You just Google Killing Our Own, and you'll find it, and you can download it. It's quite dense. I got on the Today Show with Bryant Gumbel to talk about this, and I mentioned in the interview that I believed people had been killed at Three Mile Island, and the industry sent a two-page telegram to Bryant Gumbel the next day demanding that they retract. And so what they did was they put somebody else on to refute me. And thankfully, Chris Wallace at the end of that interview said, well, I guess we'll have to have Mr. Wasserman on to debate you. So we had a debate on, I guess it was NBC, and me and this guy from the nuclear industry. And at the end of the interview, the guy picked up a copy of Killing Our Own, which was probably weighed a couple pounds, and threw it at me. And he missed, thankfully, but nonetheless. So you now have come up with this magnificent film, Radioactive, Women at Three Mile Island. It's going to open tomorrow at the Monica Theater at 7:30 p.m. in Santa Monica. Heidi, tell us a bit about yourself and about this film, if you would.
Sure. Thank you, Harvey. I really enjoyed hearing all your stories there. They're fascinating. And it's what you were saying about having the industry guy come on after with you to refute. You were saying that's exactly what Jane Fonda described in her interview, where when she went around after coming to, you know, Three Mile Island, but also after China Syndrome, and was speaking around the country, they would send industry people to refute everything
right
that she was speaking about. Yeah, so same thing. So I came to making the film. It's kind of a personal background for me, which is my parents were anti-nuclear activists, and I grew up with all of these stories and information and watching these films that even your previous interviewee, I was one of those people watching The Day After. So I was really grew up under the shadow of all these nuclear stories and disasters, and Helen Caldicott was someone that my family revered. And then as an academic, I'm a professor also, as well as a filmmaker, and I got very interested in environmental issues, you know, because obviously the world is in a terrible place environmentally. But what I was really concerned about was that the anti-nuclear movement had sort of like, where did it go? You know, what had happened? And I remember it being this huge movement. Millions of people marched to Central Park. And there were all those incredible concerts that I know you were part of with the Muse Group, Jackson Browne and Bonnie Raitt and James Taylor. And when I looked around, when I began to work on environmental issues, I saw no one was doing this work. And I know people are, but such a small group. And I was really concerned because certainly nuclear issues and dangers have not gone away at all. And then, of course, Fukushima happened. And I took a deep dive into nuclear dangers. And that's what I've been doing really intensely since right before, so 2 years before Fukushima, I sort of shifted all my work and all my research. And what I realized, because I teach this, the way people learn and are touched by these events is not through facts. I mean, there's a lot of information to understand about radiation and technology and how it works. But it's the human stories, like you were describing, the people and what the people go through. And that's something we don't know. We don't hear about what happens to a community after a nuclear disaster, and what's it like to live there? What was it like to live through it? And then the kind of sense of people being completely abandoned. You know, the press comes and the event happens, and then everybody leaves.
They were worse than abandoned. They were actually attacked. I mean, when I got there in January of 1980, and you got to imagine, central Pennsylvania, around Three Mile Island, is a rural area. It's beautiful, actually. And people lived on farms, and these were rock-ribbed Republicans in Amish country. The radiation comes down, and really only a couple of people, always women, by the way, Jane Lee and Mary Osborne, who I stayed in Jane Lee's house, farmhouse, and you could see the cooling towers from her house. I mean, it was, and I had been, by then I'd been involved with the nuclear issue for 6 years, and I was terrified, frankly. And because I knew that radiation was coming down. In fact, in January of 1980, the company vented krypton gas, radioactive krypton gas.
Summer of 1980.
Well, whenever it was. And one of the local newspapers ran a cartoon, and the title was it had to do with the krypton release, and they had the cartoon was Superman falling dead out of the sky. So, you know, from kryptonite. But nonetheless, you went in and you interviewed the people 40 years later that I interviewed. They were complaining then, and all their worst fears came true.
Yes. All of their families have cancer. I mean, multiple members of their families have cancer. One of the reasons that the mothers aren't coming, actually, they usually go with us to our screenings at all the festivals, because all of their husbands right now are sick with cancer.
Yes. Well, the ones that haven't died along the way.
And these aren't, right, but this is these, I mean, ironically, our four main characters. And yes, many people have died. Jane Lee's not alive. I mean, many, many people.
Right. And this is a situation where the company denied that there was any meltdown of fuel. They denied that there was a meltdown. And then 9 years later, finally, they got a camera in there and they found that a third, a half, even more of the fuel, in fact, melted. No surprise there. Then they said no radiation was released. That was a complete lie. And all their monitors went off scale. And there was a thermoluminescent dosimeter that was in the northwest quarter, and that showed clearly that radiation had come there, and that's where the wind was blowing. And they said, "No, I love this. No, the thing was defective. You know, it showed exactly what you would expect." And they said, "No, it was defective." But we know radiation came out, and they're still denying.
Well, that's why the film is so important, because out of the film came. I was approached by a scientist, Aaron Datesman, who will actually be at the screening tomorrow night, who had studied the plume that had, you know, that was xenon 133, which, you know, they say, well, it's not dangerous because it's a low level radiation. Well, that's true if you're exposed just briefly, but the fact that what he knows and shows us is that, and what other studies have shown, is that actually xenon 133 was in Middletown for a 24-hour period because of the air pressure and atmosphere. And so what he argues, and we're actually testing that hypothesis right now in a really important study, which I'll tell you a little bit about in a minute, but what he argues is that people were exposed to the equivalent of 60,000 to 100,000 x-rays.
Whoa.
So he's really, really looking, he's reevaluating what it means to be breathing xenon for that kind of time period. And we are looking at the chromosomes of people who were exposed, also a control group that weren't. And this is being done right now at a lab called Chromatid, which is the only lab in the world capable of looking at chromosomes at this late date to see if, in fact, their chromosomes were impacted by the radiation. And that will, I don't know the outcome yet, but we expect that Aaron's hypothesis would be correct, but we won't. Of course, we won't know until it's completed, but it will be published in 2024.
And as you well know, Heidi Huttner, a producer of this great film, Radioactive, The Women of Three Mile Island, which opens tomorrow night, 7:30 p.m. at the Monica Theater in Santa Monica, and then we'll be at the Royal for many, I guess, 10 days after. But the bottom line then became, so then the company finally said, well, maybe some radiation got out, but it's no more. They basically said it's the equivalent of exposing everybody in the area to one X-ray. Now, this was supposed to quell everybody's fears, but in fact, in the 1950s, and this was in Killing Our Own, which is free on the internet to anybody who wants it, Killing Our Own, The Disaster of America's Experience with Atomic Radiation, which is the book I co-authored after experiencing this nightmare at Three Mile Island. They said, okay, well, everybody in the area got the equivalent of an X-ray. They did not mention that in the 1950s, Dr. Alice Stewart in Great Britain did a survey. There had been an outburst of childhood leukemia. Nobody knew where it was coming from. So she did a survey, and among the many things she tested for was, well, did you get pregnant? Were you X-rayed when you were pregnant?
Because, you know, at that time, it was common to X-ray the woman when she was pregnant.
Exactly. And, yes, almost mandatory.
And because of Alice Stewart's work, they no longer do that because they now understand the great harm that occurs.
Right. But it only took 30 years to finally for the medical profession to admit that X-rays would cause a double leukemia rate among children if the mother was X-rayed when pregnant. The response of the X-ray and the medical industries at the time and the nuclear industry was when Alice Stewart came out with her findings, they didn't say, oh, well, maybe we should stop X-raying pregnant women. They said, no, they attacked her.
So what happened to Do No Harm?
Yes. Well, Heidi Huttner's film, Women of Three Mile Island, shows because, in fact, if every woman in the Three Mile Island area had been given the equivalent of a medical X-ray, their children would have suffered a doubled childhood leukemia rate. So, Heidi, when you were talking with the women of Three Mile Island, did you find leukemia among their offspring?
Well, I did not meet people who had leukemia, a lot of other cancers, but not specifically. But they're out there. I mean, there are people. I did not do a study where I, you know, did a survey of every person there. That wasn't what we did with the film. But within the families that our film takes a close look at four women who are activists and who have remained close. They're wonderful people, and they were called, you know, they were, you know, the Middletown Moms, Concerned Mothers and Women was their group. They're still on it in terms of the contamination issue now. And many members of their family, children, grandchildren even, had various cancers.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And there were people in the neighborhood, you know, I didn't get to meet them because they're not alive, who died of leukemia.
Right, and horrifying. And I want to issue a personal challenge, which I'm going to do every week, Myla, with your permission, to Oliver Stone, who sullied his great name by putting out this, I won't name the film, it's an abominable film promoting nuclear power. And I am Oliver Stone, I am challenging you once again to a public debate on nuclear power. You have advocated nuclear power. Your film is ridiculous. I've loved your work. All 100% right about JFK. I'm 100% convinced that Alan Dulles killed JFK with the green light from Lyndon Johnson. That's another story. But the bottom line is that you need to have a public debate about this pro-nuclear film. So, Mr. Stone, my name's Harvey Wasserman. You can email me solartopia@gmail.com, and let's have a public debate because Heidi Huttner's film talks to the real, you know, what have been termed through the years nuclear guinea pigs, people who were downwinders, who were exposed to radiation that the nuclear industry denied. It's an abomination. And your film is absolutely devastating because this is not abstract talking heads. These are mothers who are living in an area where they were told that no harm would come to them. And
right.
And you tell us what it was like, Heidi.
Well, they were ridiculed. They were laughed at. Every time they asked questions, they were told something else. And, you know, it's just a ton of gaslighting. And, in fact, we know that what they suspected and what they were asking about turned out to be true. But just constant, you know, shushing them up, trying to make them be quiet. And as you described, lie after lie after lie, which our film exposes. We have an incredible team of people who are in the film. We have Joanne Doerschow, who was the attorney who took the Three Mile Island case all the way to the Supreme Court. And in the film, she goes through all of the rigmarole she has to deal with Nuclear Regulatory Commission, where they too were covering things up. And
terrible.
She had to just keep fighting them and fighting them. And no matter how much she, you know, it came out that they were lying. It came out that they were covering things up and were working with and in bed with the nuclear industry. They just said, oh, well, too bad, and reopened the plant, you know. And nothing really happened to the company in any
no.
kind of fashion, and the plant was reopened. And the same thing with the science, you know, where it was just, as you described, anything that exposed them. I mean, we have a whistleblower in the film who was the health physicist, and he was measuring levels of radiation. And he said everything they were saying was absolutely a lie. There was a lot of radiation released.
Absolutely. And
he
people
was chased away. He was silenced and chased away at the time. Really.
As were many others. I mean, when my op-ed was published in the New York Times, it was published on the 1 year anniversary of the accident, March 20th, 1980. The Times ran a right side editorial of essentially denouncing the op-ed that Charlotte Curtis, the very brave editor, had allowed them to print.
Yeah.
And if people are concerned. People wonder why is Milo and so many of us obsessed with Diablo Canyon. This is precisely what we don't want to have happen at Diablo Canyon, because God forbid there's an accident there, which is a high likelihood, much higher than at Three Mile Island Unit 2 was a relatively new plant. The two reactors at Diablo Canyon are 40 years old, for God's sakes. And, find ourselves interviewing people all the way from San Luis Obispo to downtown L.A. whose lives have been destroyed by radiation.
Yes.
So if you want to see, a precursor to what could happen to us in L.A. and in San Luis Obispo County, go tomorrow night to the Monica Theater in Santa Monica. You'll meet Heidi will be there at 7:30.
Yes.
And see this film. It is devastating. And we actually have a great, great activist and author on with us who has also seen the film and has termed it a masterpiece. Carl Grossman, are you with us, Carl?
I'm right here, Harvey.
Okay, bro. You are also in New York. You're on Long Island. Carl Grossman is one of the great authors and activists in terms of the nuclear power industry. He has actually notched his belt in part with the Shoreham nuclear plant, which he helped keep from operating. It opened for a nanosecond, long enough to contaminate the thing and then shut it down. And Carl, we're going to talk about the COP28 movement in a minute, but a convention. But you also saw this film, Women of Three Mile Island. What'd you think, bro?
Well, I think it was a masterpiece. I think Heidi Huttner and her crew put together a powerful film. It's a masterpiece.
And remember, folks, this is shortchange the issue. This is what happens after a nuclear accident. I will also say, by the way, that it was one of those accidents of history, which truly is amazing, because we had gotten out and marched against nuclear power. I started at Montague, Massachusetts, and then we had big demonstrations at Seabrook, and then I was actually arrested at Diablo Canyon along with so many other people, including the great Jackson Brown, and about 10,000 people were arrested at Diablo Canyon, more than any other nuclear plant. But we had made nuclear power an issue. And this is a tribute to activism, of which Carl also is a testifier. We did have an impact. When 1974, Richard Nixon said there'd be 1,000 atomic reactors in the United States by the year 2000. And he had, 70-80% approval for that. But we started demonstrating and we started making our case, and we put doubt into the mind of many, many people, including Jane Fonda. And Jane Fonda joined up with Michael Douglas and Jack Lemmon. I was actually on the set of this movie, The China Syndrome, which filmed mostly in 1978. And nobody knew what was going to happen. They made this film about a meltdown at a theoretical nuclear plant that looked a lot like Diablo Canyon, actually. It was filmed in California. And when the China Syndrome came out, starring Jane Fonda, starring Michael Douglas and Jack Lemmon, Three Mile Island happened. And nobody in the major media knew anything about nuclear power except what we had raised in our movement. They didn't take us that seriously, of course, but they had to somewhat. And next thing you know, Walter Cronkite is on national television talking about Three Mile Island. And Heidi has Walter in the film. I got to tell you, I actually met Walter Cronkite at a gathering on Martha's Vineyard. And I said to him, you know, you did cover Three Mile Island, but you didn't go back and do what Heidi Huttner shows in a film. You didn't do this and you didn't do that. And he got really mad at me. And you've never lived until you've been in the middle of a foo-foo party on Martha's Vineyard with Walter Cronkite yelling you at the top of his voice. That was really an experience, let me tell you. But they did, they, because of the China syndrome and because of the kind of the people that Heidi talked to in your work, Carl, they did cover it.
Carl, I'm going to stop you for just a minute to let listeners know, if you really appreciate this kind of programming, that you cannot hear any place but KPFK FM 90.7 in Los Angeles. Please go to kpfk.org and please support the show. Pledge your support. KPFK really needs the bucks.
Yeah, I guarantee you, you're not going to hear this on any other station in LA or the world. I will briefly mention, by the way, Nixon said there'd be 1,000 nuclear plants in the U.S. by the year 2000, and because of the work of the No Nukes movement, there were 104. Not 1,000. And we're down to 94, which is way too many. Now, Carl Grossman, you have a piece of counterpunch about the COP28 meeting. And I got to say, somebody's got a sense of humor. How do you run a meeting on climate change that is convened by a Saudi oil and gas sheik who is denying that fossil fuels have any impact, and then turns around and says, we got to triple our nuclear power plants? Carl Grossman, you're a professor. You've written God knows how many books. You are a great sachem of this movement. Do these guys have a sense of humor or what?
Well, it's not Saudi, but if it was a Saudi sheik, I'm sure it would be the same result. But it was the president of the conference. This is a UN conference. Is the chief executive officer of the government oil company in the United Arab Emirates, and that's where this conference is going on. It's going to continue until the 12th of December in Dubai in the United Arab Emirates, which is in terms of oil production, the second biggest producer in the world, and he's essentially the chair of this conference, and he flatly denies he talks about we'll be back in caves if we got rid of fossil fuel, and of course he has that vested interest in fossil in oil. The thing which is in terms of nuclear extremely concerning is that our country, the United States, at this conference presented a declaration, as it was put, to triple the number of nuclear power plants. The title of the Declaration to Triple Nuclear Energy, and it was signed off by the United Kingdom, by Canada, by France, more than 20 countries indeed. In fact, if folks can go to my Counterpunch piece, it's counterpunch.org. You read the piece, and there's a hyperlink to this declaration, which is actually online on top of it, U.S. Department of State. And there's 440 nuclear power plants in the world today. If this declaration becomes a reality, if it's baloney that nuclear power is an antidote to climate change, if it takes hold, 440 times 3 will be over 1,000 nuclear power plants in the world, and that would just be the start. And let me just touch on the baloney. The claim that nuclear power is carbon-free, that nuclear power plants don't emit greenhouse gases. It's such BS, because if you look at the nuclear fuel cycle, mining, milling, and enrichment, particularly highly carbon intensive, and nuclear power plants themselves, in fact, emit carbon, a radioactive form of carbon, carbon-14. So like you were talking, Harvey, about Three Mile Island, and it took Hollywood to really dramatize and enable people to understand the dangers of nuclear power. I'm a professor of journalism, and I wish media and or Hollywood would jump to this current, it's the big excuse now for nuclear power, climate change, climate warming, global warming. And in fact, what's necessary is the end of the use of fossil fuels, the burning of fossil fuels, which is the largest cause of climate change, and a transition to safe, clean, green energy, solar and wind and so forth and so on. An excellent book, Mark Jacobson, Dr. Mark Jacobson, speaking of California, he's out of Stanford. He wrote a book just published a few months ago, No Miracles Needed, How Existing Technologies, we're talking about green technologies, could provide all the energy we need. And says Dr. Jacobson, and he's an engineer, we do not need nuclear power.
What we need is the political will. We don't need miracles. We need the political will.
Right. And we got to ask yourself the question. I'll ask you this, Carl, as a professor. Which is the bigger lie? Nobody died at Three Mile Island, or nukes can help with climate change? That's a horse race.
I did a documentary early on, 1993. Three Mile Island Revisited is the title. And I stand in front of the, I'm in the town in Pennsylvania, right next to these two nuclear power plants. And I open the documentary by saying the nuclear industry claims no one died as a result of the accident. And I point back to those plants. Don't tell that to the people of Goldsboro, Pennsylvania, where, and then I spend a good deal of time showing how cancer has been epidemic since the accident. If somebody wants to see Three Mile Island Revisited, just go to the website of my TV production company. It's envirovideo.com, envirovideo.com, and you can see, no cost, just you'll see under documentaries Three Mile Island Revisited, and you'll also see an interview that I did with Dr. Mark Jacobson just a few months ago on his important book, No Miracles Needed, and other shows that we at EnviroVideo have made. We've made now, since we began in 1991, 700 programs, which you can view online. And thank heavens for Pacifica, but another source of information about the dangers of nuclear technology, the lethal dangers, is EnviroVideo. And I really urge people, go online, go to envirovideo.com, and you can view at our website, on our website, many of these, about 30-40% of our programs.
Okay.
Over now the 32 years have to do with the dangers of nuclear power and the safe green alternatives to this lethal technology, nuclear power.
Well, Carl, thanks for mentioning Pacifica. People can go to kpfk.org to donate. And, you know, we also want to point out that here in California, we are really up against it. The governor has stabbed us in the back. He signed a deal in 2016 to shut Diablo Canyon. We're going to do more on this next week because they're also simultaneously assaulting the solar energy industry. In California, we have 70,000 people working in solar. The rooftop solar in California is 1.8 million installations. Way more power comes from solar in California than from Diablo Canyon. You got 1,500 people working at Diablo Canyon, 70,000 in solar, and they're trying to kill the solar energy industry here, as long as alongside keeping Diablo open.
Well, let me mention.
Well, wait, Carl, Milo wanted to ask you a question real quick.
Carl, I'm wondering who benefits. Now, you say that Canada and the United Kingdom signed on to this horrendous idea of tripling nuclear power around the world. Why is Canada a signatory?
Well, Canada has, you know, we got the CANDU reactor is a Canadian brand. Canada has been up to its neck in nuclear, and so has the United Kingdom. As to a sensible reason, I mean, Harvey comments about this declaration to triple the number of nuclear power plants in the world. It's beyond insane. And in terms of fighting nuclear power, let me note that it wasn't just Shoreham on Long Island. Shoreham was the first of what was to be 7 to 11 nuclear power plants to be built on Long Island in New York. Long Island was to be turned into what the nuclear promoters at the time, this goes back to the 60s, 70s, and 80s, a nuclear park providing nuclear-generated electricity to the entire Northeast.
Right. And let me point out, Carl, we're almost out of time. We're talking with the great Carl Grossman, author of Power Hungry and many, many other great works. I will point out that what you helped stop on Shoreham, a nuclear park, was also going to happen in Bakersfield. And they were going to build many, many nuclear reactors in Bakersfield. But then they noticed a small problem, enough water to cool the thing, which we have a problem with Palo Verde in Arizona, which the LADWP owes 10%. Carl Grossman, Power Hungry, magnificent to have you on. And Heidi Huttner, can you very quickly tell us about your showing tomorrow night in Santa Monica?
And it will be at the Lemley, Monica.
On Friday.
And the Lemley Royal. They're both Lemley Theaters.
Yes.
So join us tomorrow night. Many people on our team will be there at 7:30. It should be a really fantastic screening and Q&A. And I also wanted to say that you can find us at radioactivethefilm.com. And there you will see our future screenings and where we're going and what we're doing. We've won a lot of awards. And we are dropping on Amazon Prime and Apple Plus on March 12th. March is the 45th anniversary of
one minute
meltdown at Three Mile Island.
Thank you.
It's a really important date. We're going to have a number of events around the commemoration, and just stay tuned, and you can find out more at radioactivethefilm.com.
And we'll have you back on, and Carl.
We're going to Boulder on the 20th. We're traveling all over.
Okay, and we'll have you back on to talk more about that tomorrow night, 7:30 at the Monica Theater in Santa Monica, and then at the Royal. Carl Grossman, it's always an honor to have you with us. Thank you, D'Angelo. Thank you, Myla Reeson.
And please go to kpfk.org and pledge your support.
Go for it. And when you do that, shut Diablo Canyon, people, please. We'll see you next week at California Solartopia.
Garden was lost, so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But don't you know about Solartopia? Solartopia, Solartopia.
We needed more. The rich got rich, the poor got sore. The fuel ran scarce, the price jumped high, and so we gave nuclear power a try. But
don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia? Shut those new plants down, but don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world.
Now we're fighting wars over oil and gas. No matter who wins, it will not last. The earth is scarred, the planet is warming. Don't you think at all of it's a great big warning?
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia?
Hi, this is Jack Eyde from EcoJustice Radio. Check us out on KPFK at our new time, Thursdays from 4 to 5 p.m. Join us as we present environmental and climate stories from a social justice frame intended to amplify community voices, broaden the reach of grassroots movements, and inspire action. That's EcoJustice Radio, Thursdays at